This is BBC Five Live, available on the BBC iPlayer radio app. Up all night.
Good morning, I'm Faye Ruscoe. You are listening to Up All Night and the technology phone in here on BBC Five Live. There is still time to contact us with your tech and gadget issues. Fevzi Turkalp, gadgetdetective.com is our expert. You can call 0500 909 693. You can text us 85058 or email upallnight@bbc.co.uk. And we are at BBC Five Live on social media. Fevzi, let's try and get through a few quick fire questions, if you like, which probably won't turn out to be quick fire, but we can do our best, can't we?
I'll do my best. I'm not known for quick fire, I admit. you know why? Because I know people wait so long, and I want to give them a...
Make sure they get the correct answer.
Yeah, so sometimes even if that's fewer people,
that's absolutely fine.
My feeling is it's better to help some properly.
Well, Richard the Milkman has got in touch. Richard says, I have a laptop running Windows 7. When I try to defragment my hard drive, I get a dialogue box comes up which says another program is using this item using custom settings. And it says reset settings by pushing this button, which I do, and nothing happens. Any ideas, says Richard?
Yeah. Okay, so Windows is a multitasking operating system, so you may be aware of it running more than one program because you're running your word processor at the same time as your browser, etc. But there are also processes that run in the background that access the hard drive. So, for example, an antivirus program would be a good example of that. It runs in the background. It's accessing the hard drive pretty much all of the time and can interfere with a process such as defragmenting. So for those that don't know, defragmenting is something that you do to a traditional hard drive. That's to say the spinning ones. You don't need to do it to solid state devices because they work differently. And it's something that joins together all the bits of a single file that are in fact scattered across physically across the surface of a disk, and by doing that it improves the performance because the head, when it reads information, doesn't have to skip all over the disk to find all the fragments and join them up. They're already in one contiguous block, so that's why one would do it. One way in which you could try to get around this problem, Richard, is to boot up, or that's to say to start up your Windows 7 computer in a stripped down mode called safe mode. So safe mode is still Windows, but it's Windows in its most basic form without all the bells and whistles running in the background. So when you start up a computer in safe mode, and typically you can do that on Windows 7 by hitting the F8 key. So you've got a row of function keys along the top. If as soon as you press the on button on your computer and it starts to boot up or start up, every 1 or 2 seconds you tap the F8 key until you get a black screen with white writing on it, and that's a menu. You select on that menu safe mode, and that starts up Windows. Everything will look big and chunky. It'll look like a Fisher-Price version of Windows with big chunky characters and everything, but that means that nothing that isn't essential to Windows is running in the background. Probably best to do that when you're not connected to the internet, just in case your security software is also incapable at that point. So when you do that, then your defragmentation software has a much better chance and should be able to run without being impeded by other programs that are also trying to access that drive. You can imagine, so with a defragmentation program, it's literally scanning a whole drive and pulling off all the little bits of a fragmented file and putting them together. Just imagine that if when it's trying to do that, another program's trying to read and write that data, it's that way lies madness. And that's why the defragmenter will often say, no, stop the other stuff accessing it before I can do my magic. So that's what you need to do. That should work. Good luck.
Another question from Shelley. She says, how do I get my photos off my iPhone 6 plus 64 GB onto either a memory card or transfer to my new iPhone 7 Plus? I have no laptop or computer. I use my phone for everything internet and computer related.
Okay. The best way to do it is on a computer of some sort, laptop or PC, and even if you can borrow one, that's the fastest and best way to do it, because what you do is quite simple. You plug your iPhone into that computer. That computer needs to be running iTunes software, It will then do a complete backup automatically for you of the whole phone. And then when you get the new phone, it will say to you, do you want to set this up as a new phone or do you want to import the data from your old phone? And if it's another iPhone, it's very simple to do. The alternative to, so that's the best way and that's the quickest way. And it also means that your data doesn't have to be stored up in the cloud for someone else to potentially hack. I personally don't like backing up my phone to the cloud, but that's a personal choice.
Why is that out of interest?
Why is that? Because as soon as that happens, that data is no longer under your sole control. It's usually in a foreign jurisdiction, usually in America. Not that there's anything wrong with America, but they have different laws about who can access that data and when. And we've had some very high profile cases of people having their, and it's not just an Apple problem, you know, but people having their photos hacked. So you can set up an iPhone, for example, in such a way that whenever you take a picture, not only is that picture stored on your iPhone, but it's also stored in the iCloud. Now that's great, it's convenient because all these things can be accessed from a variety of devices without you having to keep a copy on each device. You know, you can just access it from the cloud. But there is always this balance between convenience on the one hand and security on the other. It's, the cloud is very convenient. It is not very secure. So just be aware of that. But if you don't have access, if you can't even borrow a PC or a Mac for a limited period, then you can back up your phone onto iCloud and then reinstate it from there. It's also slower to do that because you're then relying upon the speed of your, particularly your upward internet connection in backing up the contents of your drive. So even a 64 gigabyte phone, it tends to be a slow to do it that way. It's faster to do it via a wire, you know, just a simple connector into a USB socket on a PC. But you can do that, and Apple do that very well, actually. I mean, their implementation, as technical implementation, is very good, I have to say, you know, to give them credit. But there's just this fundamental thing about the fact that, you know, when you do that, all your photos, all your personal contact data and so forth go up onto the cloud. I think that people are not as aware of the implications of doing that as they need to be. It's convenient and we're invited to do it. Increasingly, it's getting harder and harder to do things on our own machines, and we must, you know, manufacturers force us to use the cloud. It does have this security implication. So it depends on your data. If you've got nothing on your phone that you wouldn't mind being published all over the internet, then go for it.
Okay, John in Whitney says, I save all my files to two external drives for safekeeping. Yep. How can I save them to both at the same time without having to save as every time? I use Office 2010 on Windows 10.
Both at the same time. You could do it by opening up two Windows Explorer windows and setting one off and then the other one off. I wouldn't recommend that, and often you won't get double the speed in doing that, because although the drives themselves are independent and can record information independently of the other one, the computer that's serving up the data that's being recorded onto each device, that data is flowing through a channel which is then usually shared. It depends on how your USB ports are configured, but you might find that you don't get a massive improvement. But I personally would do it one at a time, but I understand if you need to do that. Also, some backup software has that ability built into it, so you don't have to flit around with trying to get Windows to do it. But although Windows is a multitasking operating system, I personally would do it one at a time because it's a background task. It's not going to stop you from doing other things at the same time. The only other thing I'd say to you about these backups is if you've got it on two separate drives, make sure at least one of them is kept at a different location. Okay, because one of the things about backups is you don't just do two backups to guard against one of the drives from failing, but you do it against the drives being destroyed or stolen. So if you were to, God forbid, you were to have a fire and both of your backups were sitting, you know, in your home along with the original, then all the backups could be lost. So it's good to just do one of the backups and actually take it to, you know, a relative or a trusted friend. Make sure that it's encrypted, because, you know, there's a limit on trust. And, you know, encrypt it fully and then give it to your mum or your brother or whatever. That way, you know, if something catastrophic were to happen at one location, the other one should still be good. Beyond that, you can consider cloud backup. But again, make sure that the data is fully encrypted before you do that, because some backup software doesn't allow you to encrypt. That's to say, scramble the data fully, and you must use, you know, what's called strong encryption. That's the type of scrambling that is not easy for anyone to undo. May I just make the other point about backups whilst I mm-hmm. have the opportunity? There is a kind of malware, viruses, if you like, that is becoming more and more popular with criminals, which is called ransomware. Ransomware is a type of virus that infects a computer or other device, internet-connected device, and infects a computer, and you don't become immediately aware that it's there. But what it starts to do is to encrypt or scramble all of the files on that device and all of the backups that are attached to that device. And once it's done that, it then says, here I am, I've locked all your files, aren't I clever? If you ever want to see your files again, if you ever want to see those pictures of, you know, little Freddy when he was two, or your script that you've been working on for 6 years, or whatever it is that's valuable to you, you must pay a ransom. And
that's awful.
It is awful, and it's very profitable. And although you can run antivirus and all the rest of it, and you should, the best protection against ransomware is to have up-to-date backups which are disconnected from the computer other than at the time the backup is being made, and stored separately, so that if the machine becomes infected, that you have a chance of just recovering you won't unscramble those files because they're strongly encrypted, but you actually have at least a chance of restoring them from your backup.
If that happened to you, just out of interest, what would be your first move? Should you be getting the police involved, you know, if you're being effectively blackmailed, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. It's a criminal offence, and they'll direct you to a part of the police called action fraud. They'll record it and won't do much with it, unfortunately, because there are cases in America of police forces paying the ransom, put it that way. It's technically, it's very elegant. Morally, it's reprehensible. And this software is getting smarter and smarter, and some of it now can even reach into online cloud backups and scramble those as well. So it's really hard to do this, because the other thing is, some of the software is getting really smart, so it doesn't even start scrambling the file straight away. It waits until you connect your backup device and then scrambles that as well. And it's getting harder and harder to effectively protect yourself. But the best form of protection currently is still to do more than one backup and to unplug those backups as quick as you can. And by the way, all the more reason to have a solid state drive as your external backup. They are now sufficiently affordable to be able to buy and use for that reason. And the reason I say that is they are so much quicker. And because they're quicker, the risk window to you when it's connected and doing the backup is that much less. Do your regular backups, keep one of them off-site, consider a cloud backup if you can do encryption of the data before you send it up the line.
I always finish these programs with you, Fevzy, absolutely terrified, I have to say.
I'm so sorry. But do you know what? You know why I say these things? Because I speak to a lot of people once it's already happened. So
yeah,
you notice even when, for example, that gentleman who it was Daniel, wasn't it? David, sorry, who lost his data on his flash drive. So there was advice that I could give to others which was of no use to him, and I feel bad giving it when he's on the phone because it doesn't help him. But there are things that we can do now if we understand the risk, and it's better to be a little bit, you know, frightened today than be forlorn tomorrow.
Okay, let's take a question now from Brian in Sunderland. Good morning to you, Brian. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Faye. Hello, Fevzi. Good morning.
Morning.
Morning. My question I would like to ask you about internet radios. And I would like to know, do you have to have a computer to use an internet radio, or can you get an internet radio that you don't have to rely on to use with a computer?
Yeah, you don't need to have a computer. What you need to have is a way of accessing the internet, so if you're using it at home, you'd either mm-hmm. need to have a contract with an internet service provider to bring internet into your home, and then that could then be sent into the radio, either using a cable. Some internet radios still allow you to connect to the internet using what's called an Ethernet cable. So that's straight out the back of the router box. That's a box that spreads the internet around your home or office. So you can either do it via wire, or your router will have Wi-Fi and the internet radio will log on to that Wi-Fi. You don't need to have a computer for that, in a sense that the internet radio is a dedicated internet-based computer.
Yeah. Does it use a lot of, if you had, say, for example, one of those MiFi devices, a portable MiFi device with a mobile phone company, and just say, for example, you might have, say, 5 gigabytes of internet, would the internet radio swallow up a lot of that usage, or is it quite...
It depends on the station. So some stations broadcast at what are called higher bit rates. That's to say they use more data per minute of the broadcast.
I was thinking of stations over in America. You know, if you wanted to go over in New York.
Absolutely. I mean, internet radio is a wonderful device, and it is the future more than, you know, our current methods of FM and even DAB. Eventually all radio and all broadcasts will be internet based. So it's a great way of doing it. Have you got a smartphone, Brian?
I have actually, yeah.
Yep.
I've got a Samsung phone.
Right,
yeah.
So you can use your smartphone as to set up a wireless hotspot. That's, you know, using the SIM card that's within it. You could try it with that and have a look at the rate at which you're using data. Keep a close eye on the data per sort of 10 minutes or hour of use, and work mm-hmm. out exactly what your usage would be for your stations. Radio's not too bad. The area when you'd start to get into trouble is if you started watching, you know, on-demand television using that. I think it's doable using a data allowance on a SIM card, and a lot of people do that because it's also more flexible, because it means you can take your radio out with you and, you know, have it, you know, in the garden or in the park and still be listening to it or traveling elsewhere. But just be aware that most internet deals, you know, for data on a mobile phone SIM are not unlimited. And as you've said, so it's worth just doing the experiment. But as you've already got a smartphone, I'd try setting it up on the smartphone first and just monitoring what your use would be. Because if you then do it over a period of time, keeping a close eye on the data usage, that will also guide you on what data package you should buy. Not one that's too big, because it will be too expensive, and not one that's too small, because then it will get expensive because you'll exceed the limit. It's a bit of Goldilocks there.
I won't say what network I'm with, but I am with a network that allows you to put a cap on your internet so you won't go over allowances, which is really good and useful.
It is good. I don't always rely on those caps, because I've heard of examples where people have put caps on and it's still gone over the cap and the company has demanded paying. And the thing is, again, those rates get silly once you go over a cap. So it's very affordable up to that cap, and then suddenly, for some reason, that data now costs 20 times more. So great. If you have a cap capability, use it, but don't solely rely upon it. It may not always protect you. The best thing is just to monitor the data usage, which is quite easy to do on a smartphone.
Okay, Brian in Sunderland, thank you so much for your call. We were talking earlier, Fevzi, about a question from John in Whitney about how can he save to two external drives without having to save as every time.
Yeah.
Somebody's tweeted us, ShallPass878 has tweeted us to say there is free software out there that can automatically sync both backups. She said, for example, Free File Sync. What do you think of those? Do you know about them?
So that's syncing one drive against the other, and you can do that in the background. I haven't used that particular piece of software, but yes, that functionality exists in various third-party software. It also exists in some backup programs, which is probably could be technically a more robust way to do it because it's part intrinsic part of the backup process. But again, you know, I don't think many of us are that busy that we can't do it manually, but you know, or sequentially at least. But yes, there is software that does that.
Okay, Dave in Boreham Wood, we're back to phones now, says, I have a phone contract with O2 that expires soon. I do not want to renew it, but do I need to contact O2 or does it cancel itself? Good question.
What will normally happen is that it does depend on the detail of the contract, but what normally happens is you go from a fixed term contract to a rolling contract where once they'll continue to take the money from you by direct debit if that's your the way that you pay for it. They won't suddenly stop at the end of the contract period,
right?
But your cancellation rights are then there after that. But
right.
you might need to give them a month or more notice. So, you know, if you know you want to end it, then give them the notice.
And how early can you give that notice? If for example, your contract doesn't end for another 6 months, but you think I'm going to forget, can you tell them now when this contract ends? I don't want
some
to take
any more
money.
Some of them won't accept the notice until you're outside the contract period.
Clever, aren't they?
Yeah. Sadly. Well, they don't have to, and some of them don't. You know, and I wouldn't rely upon it either. You know, you're relying upon them making a note and referencing that note 6 months later or what have you. Far better to get to the point end of the contract or at least the last month of the contract and then give notice so that it ends shortly after the end of the contract. That's really, I mean, you can just cancel the direct debit, but that's not the way to do it because although that will stop them taking the money will still be legally due. So you actually need to inform them, and sometimes you need to inform them in writing, just worth pinging them an email.
Okay. Ian in London, we've got about 90 seconds left. Ian in London says, concerning flash drives, sometimes when one goes through the eject procedure, a cannot eject message comes up, even if one has closed down all connected files.
Yeah.
In these circumstances, is it see, you've terrified everyone, I told you. In these circumstances, is it appropriate to shut down the computer, then remove the drive?
Yeah, if you really, you know, to use a technical term, if it really gets its knickers in a twist to that degree that it won't let you eject it and you've shut down everything you know. So you can try and, in Windows, so you can not only shut down programs, but you can kill, that's to say, stop running individual processes. So if you know what the process is, you can shut that down and stop it getting its paws on your drive and allowing you to eject it. As a last resort, you can shut down the computer. That's not to say unplug it, shut it down in an orderly fashion. And then when it's powered down, wait a little bit and then pull the drive out. It's not ideal. There can still be problems with that. But if it gets stuck, then that, you know, I've had to do it. I mean, frankly, I've also taken my chances and just whipped a drive out, but it's not something. It's not something. Look, you know, the cobbler's children have no shoes. You know,
you rebel, Fevzy.
I just live so dangerously. What can I tell you?
Brilliant. Oh, well, thank you so much for your company for the last hour and a half. Lovely
pleasure
as ever to talk to you. Thank you very much. I'm going to go home and panic in a dark room again. No, I won't really. I'm only joking. But thank you so much for all your advice.
On digital and online. This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.